This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. We're a couple seconds late. Brian was trying to show me some technical things. I want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle & Howerton Automotive. And they're at 2006 North Main Street in Shebaville, Tennessee. And you can reach them at 1-800-264-6800. Of course, that's toll-free. Or on the internet, pirtlehowerton.com. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take about a 15-20 minute drive, 231 South towards Shebaville, and it's on your left before you get into town. Go in and talk to the nice people there, because they are some of the friendliest people that you'll ever run into. And they're not pushy. Just walk around the lot, see if you see something that you like, and I'll guarantee you they'll work out a deal for you. And just think how more pleasant it will be driving back in your brand new car. All right, we have a very interesting show today, and they have put a big box that hasn't been opened yet over here on the counter here. And Kent Seiler has brought one of his good friends, and Jim Haveron. Did I pronounce that right?
That's correct.
Which is... These are two guys that are working on something that is extremely important for the history of MTSU and Rutherford County. And it's the Gore Center. And Jim, you are one of the directors of the Gore Center.
Well, I'm the archivist. I'm directly below the director of the center.
Is that somebody that you would get for maybe being a traitor to the country, an archivist?
Not that I'm aware of, no. That's...
I think it's in the library sense, Truman. the scholastic sense.
And this has history dating back, I guess, since the beginning of Rutherford County. And how did this get started? I mean, I'm kind of interested in that.
The Albert Gore Research Center was formed some years ago, and primarily to be a repository for materials that didn't have a home, and also to... collect materials related to Rutherford County, the regional area of Middle Tennessee, the university. And they built around the papers of Albert Gore Sr., as we called him, the old senator.
Right.
And that's why we're named for Albert Gore Sr.
One of our graduates.
Mm-hmm. And because he was connected with the university, they approached him for the papers. Mm-hmm. And they're one of the centerpieces of our collection there.
I wonder why he was so interested. I guess this goes back when he first, I guess probably even as far as being at the university here. Why was he so interested in saving a lot of the memorabilia that you're able to have here?
Well, a lot of this would be materials that he would have saved in his office. Uh-huh. We have things that related to his daily correspondence. And this, of course, is part and parcel to when you're running a business, or if you're in an office, you keep your records and keep them so you can refer back to them for whatever reason. After the fact is when you begin to realize the historical importance of these collections, and that's when they're no longer in current use, where the person creating the records might need to go back and use them. At that point in time, they might move to an archives, and that's where they would be preserved for research value and their historical value.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long have you been compiling all this data? Because from what I can talk to, what Kent's been relating to, it is an enormous amount of data.
It is enormous. Now, I personally have only been with the Research Center for a year, although I'm a graduate of Middle Tennessee State University, and from their public history program where the archivists are trained. The center's been around since the 90s, and it's been an ongoing process. And I've been working as an archivist full and part-time for about 7 years in one capacity or another. All of this is an ongoing process. You reevaluate your collections periodically. There is special training involved to make sure that you preserve things in a way that you can provide access to researchers. Mm-hmm. And our materials are available to the general public. So we need to try to arrange them in a way that will make them most accessible to the most number of people.
And Truman, it is a long process. I mean, I was, you know, we've just started on Congressman Bart Gordon's 650 boxes. And that's what I did bring one of those today that it hasn't been opened since the 90s. I thought we would open it on the show here and see what we found, because a lot of it is kind of a treasure hunt. The Gore papers, generally what members of Congress do is at the end of their terms, they've accumulated, at the end of their service, they've accumulated a great deal of material. A lot of it, very historical. Mm-hmm. Senator Gore's collection contains the 1964 civil rights legislation and a lot, right, where he was a key vote, and a lot of the information that went on there. I was eating at Far East Market, Far East, mm-hmm, Restaurant for lunch the other day, and Judge Mark Rogers came up to me and asked, mm-hmm, me what I was doing. I told him I was teaching and working in the Gore Center some. And he said, I was a student at MTSU when that collection arrived. And wow, he said, they put us down in the basement of the old Todd Library. And ironically, that's where the center has returned. Mm-hmm. And he said, we would open boxes. He says, I remember opening a box, and it was full of gavels.
Hmm.
And I talked with Jim. Can probably still tell us about the gavels.
We have
still
the gavels.
There.
Yeah. We have the gavels.
Yeah. So
that's amazing. So how are you going to put those in order? I presume that Bart will probably have a section just for his work, and then of course Senator Gore,
right,
of course, and then and young Senator Gore, Vice President Gore.
We do arrange things by the creator of the records, uh-huh, so that you'll have Senator Gore's papers will all be together and Representative Gordon's papers will all be together. We, uh-huh, have papers from John Bragg and Jim Cummings from the, uh-huh, state legislature, and they'll all be arranged by their individual.
Jim Cooper's first cycle in Congress when he was in the 4th district.
We have some of the Cooper papers. We have a few items that belong to Governor Ellington, though most of his papers would have gone with the State Library and Archives. But we also have material, physical objects. We're hoping to have a museum attached to the center, or that the center will at least help administer someday. So we have those gavels, and we have a lectern from Governor Ellington, and we, mm-hmm, have memorabilia from the school, autographed footballs, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Those are kept in a separate collection. But the records that we have are arranged by creator. And so if you wanted to look through the Gore papers, then you would come through. And we have what we call a finding aid, which, mm-hmm, is a tool that we would use to help you locate the specific subject matter that you wish to research within the Gore papers.
But even the Gore papers, Truman, it is a long-term ongoing. I was talking to one of the graduate assistants the other day and just asked her what she was doing. I saw a letter on her desk that looked like one that Bart, that we got in Bart's office all the time, talking, mm-hmm, about some illnesses they were having and needing help with their Social Security disability, and, mm-hmm, asking Senator Gore to help. It's from 1965. And she was cataloging them and logging them in, and it's a great amount of, again, you got to look at these things in terms of 500 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great collection of, what were people interested in? What did they write their members of Congress about? What problems were they having? What was life like? And it is a terrific aid for that type of thing.
I'm sure that you use a lot of students. And I presume that they get credits for their research and also helping you align everything.
We have student workers, both graduate and undergraduate workers. We have scholarship students and work study students. We particularly rely upon our graduate students from the public history program at Middle Tennessee State University, because, mm-hmm, these are students who are, if they're not in the archives field, they're in museum studies or preservation. Many of the skill sets are the same,
mm-hmm,
and they come in and they learn to do the job, and they perform the job that an archival technician would perform. So, mm-hmm, our graduate assistants, of course, get what a teaching assistant or a research assistant would get. They get tuition and a stipend, but they also get real experience. If I was out in some other location and I was hiring somebody and they came to me and they said, I worked 4 semesters as a graduate assistant at the Albert Gore Research Center, I'd say, well, here's somebody who's had 4 semesters of real archival experience. And they do the work. They do it under the supervision. I'm a certified archivist, and, mm-hmm. and we supervise all the work. But they do the work, and they learn on the job, and they know their stuff.
Is it set up now where it would be kind of like going into a library where you go in and you'll have a list of cards there or a computer now, and it would direct you to the area that you need to go in?
Actually, it's quite different. When you come in, you have a research room, and this is mm-hmm. where you would come in to do your research, and you'd be assisted by a member of our staff, which mm-hmm. would probably be a student, or it might be myself or Dr. Williams if he was in. And we talk with you about what your research interest is, do a reference interview with you so that we can help narrow down your subject, and then we get the finding aids out and we look for what the material is. The material is kept behind closed doors, mm-hmm. and it's in an arrangement, as I said, by the creator, which is different from what people are used to in a library, mm-hmm. and often would be pretty confusing to a person if they had to go and try to find it themselves. Mm-hmm. I've done research in archives for years. The first time that I walked back into the back of one and saw how it was arranged, I didn't understand the system at all. So it can be confusing. But the staff will bring the papers out. And then for preservation purposes, we have set rules such as you're only allowed pencil and paper. You put up your other materials. We provide lockers where you can lock your materials up. You go through one folder at a time. We show you how to handle the documents. If there are any documents that are too fragile to be handled, then we will handle them for you, and we've been trained on doing that. In some cases, we have some that are so fragile that we just have photographic copies for people to look at. If they don't actually have to have the original document, then that usually will meet their purpose. Then when you're finished with that folder, go on to the next. But mm-hmm. everything's kept in the back, and it's a confined area, and so you just have a small research room.
You know what it sounds like? Have you ever seen the movie Citizen Kane, where the guy goes into this room, and he's got 20 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever, and he can only look at such and such part?
Yes.
But it's going to be pretty much confined to specific needs when individuals go in there looking for that type of history.
Right, and that's primarily because you have to have an intermediary to go back and get the material for you.
And that would be the person that's working with you.
That would be the person who's working with you. And that's good training for our students, because mm-hmm. you really learn a lot. Most of our, all of our graduate students are history majors, so they understand historical research. And they've been where you are. Mm-hmm. So they understand what it's like to be needing to look through those. One of the advantages to this over a library, however, is if you're looking in a library and you want to look up, say, a letter on that Senator Gore had written, and it might be in a book, and you go to the book and you look in the index and you turn to the page and you see it, that's it, it's great, you're gone. We might bring out a folder of letters that have been written over a period of 6 months, mm-hmm. and you start looking through those, and you find things that you didn't know you were even looking for. A lot of hidden treasures in an archive. One of the difficulties for a historian going through there is to keep their mind on their research, because they go, oh, wow, I never knew this. They see something they'd never seen before. It's pretty fascinating if you're of that mindset.
It's kind of interesting, Truman, is the archives got a lot of business nationally from people coming in mm-hmm. when Al Gore Jr. was running for president. Basically, journalists from across the country would come in and go through his dad's papers, mm-hmm. just looking for story ideas, looking for, I don't want to say dirt, but just mm-hmm. whatever they could find that might make an interesting story. They would come in and go through these things, or how, maybe take an issue that Vice President Gore had a stance on and try to find the same issue and see, where his dad was. But what, like Jim mentioned, this archive, it really serves two very distinct purposes. I mean, it provides a repository for a lot of history, and we will probably later on talk a lot about it's the repository for most of MTSU's history. This 100th anniversary that just came up, a lot of the material came from this center. But the other thing it does is it's there for students, because whether it's training them for jobs, giving history majors things very good training, or providing a lot of resources that we're now getting into the classroom. I'm teaching three classes this semester and three in the spring, and I'm being able to utilize a lot of this material in those classes. I'm teaching one in the spring on the kind of the changing voter demographics since the Civil War in Middle Tennessee. And one of the things that Bart donated to the Gore Center was 26 years of polling material. And you know, it's you're talking about, if you had to buy it, $250,000-$300,000 is what the campaigns paid for that over the years, of really good data on demographics issues, a very good snapshot of life in Middle Tennessee. So we're using that to look at some of the voter trends and other things. But there's again all kinds of things there that are helping educate students.
I know the information is almost overwhelming, but to be able to go in and find exactly what you're looking for, I know you're going to have help when you first go in, but even the people that will be helping you will not know everything that you're going to be looking for.
That's right.
And I was wondering, when you're actually given the data, once you sit down in your chair at your desk, is that in some type of book form, and is there an index there that will lead you to the areas that you need to go to? And then how in the world did you get it to that point to start with?
Well, it's a little more complicated than just a quick index.
Right.
And we're moving more and more as we move toward the computer and putting things online toward keyword searchable material, which will help you find more specific data. But usually what we do is we get you down to a point where we can say, okay, what you're interested in is probably in this packet of material, and then you have to look for it yourself. Mm-hmm. You're researching. You know, most people take it for granted when they go to the library. They can just go and pick up the information. They forget that somewhere along the line, the person who wrote the book had to go digging through all that information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we get you to that point when we process the records, which is in some cases, it can take years to process a small collection, a large collection. But when we process the papers and the documents, we make inventories, we check the arrangement, we produce what I refer to as a finding aid, and in it you will find how the papers are arranged, you'll find biographical information about the individual or the organization that created the records. We do these in segments, and so we're not doing all of MTSU's records at once. We might be working on the history department, we might have somebody who's working on papers of an individual from the history department. That would be part of a larger scale where we'd also would work on the College of Liberal Arts, for instance, and then higher on up the hierarchy of the school. It's the same way with the political papers. We'll go through, and for instance, in Senator Gore's papers, we have his correspondence arranged. We have them arranged by date. We have arranged by some types of topics, issue mail, etc. And so we can get you narrowed down to a certain spot. But then there reaches the spot where the researcher pretty much has to go through it himself and go through bit by bit. We don't have the manpower to catalog every single item in a collection. And really, it'd be more difficult to do that because that article might pertain to several different subjects. So in the library, you might decide that it's under this subject, but in an archive, it might pertain to a dozen different subjects, and it's much more difficult to narrow it down.
Do you work any with the Rutherford County Historical Association hand in hand? I can see where you would intertwine a lot of your ideas.
We have some materials from the Rutherford County Historical Society that were donated to us, and we have some of their actual records of the society, and we also have We have some of their small collections that they've done over the years. We try to work with other entities, including the Limebaugh Library, the County Archive, other archives, State Library and Archives. I'm on the executive board for the Society of Tennessee Archivists, so I know a lot of the other archives. And one of the things we try not to do is step on the toes of somebody else. If somebody's already collecting something, we leave it with them, and we just find out where it is so we can send the researcher to them. So we have some material that is from Rutherford County Historical Society, but some of that material is also in the Limebaugh History Room. And then records of Rutherford County, such as marriage records and vital records, things like that, are at the Rutherford County Archive. Mm-hmm. So there are actually several places that one would go if one was researching Rutherford County.
Now, you also have some audio records there.
We have audio records, and we have oral histories that have been collected. We have several ongoing oral history projects, and we have some projects that have been completed. Mm-hmm. Some of these were done some years ago, and some of them much more recently. We've recently set up a cell phone historical tour mm-hmm. of the buildings on the campus, and you can go around with your cell phone, and there are 17 stops, and you can poke in the number, and you'll hear a student read a little short history about the building or whatever, and then you'll get the opportunity to listen to clips from the collections, if you wish.
Let's see how that sounds.
Kirksey Old Main, better known as KON, is one of the four original buildings that rose out of farm fields in time for the normal school to open in 1911. The imposing facade has greeted students for 100 years, first as the multi-purpose building housing classrooms, offices, a gymnasium and auditorium, and the bookstore. Extensive remodeling over the decades has kept KOM in constant use as a classroom building while relocating other functions to new locations such as the Cope Administration Building. In 1978, the university renamed it the Howard G. Kirksey Old Main Building to honor the former professor of education and vice president of academic affairs.
That's that's a great thing that you guys are doing. I mean, it really is. We're going to take a quick break and let you know that part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And you can reach them at 713-4639 or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And this business owned by Melissa Warren will go into your home and take care of your normal duties if you have become a little bit older and maybe not be able to take care of your tasks as like you normally would, or you have had some sickness. They'll come in and make sure that you're still able to retain your quality of life, and you won't have to leave your home. And I think it's such a wonderful service that they're doing. And if you're interested, call 713-4639.
Hello, this is Ron Harper with the Minerva Drive Church of Christ. Are you looking for answers to life's problems? Come and join us this week through Wednesday night for our fall revival meeting. Our speaker will be Keith Parker from Hendersonville, Tennessee. The times will be 7 o'clock each evening. Come and hear a message from God's Word. I'd like to invite you to our fall revival meeting. Our address is 1115 Minerva Drive in Murfreesboro.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. We're at the Garden Patch Thrift Store on Spring Street across from the tall NHC building, talking with Christy Sanford.
Instead of it just being rows and rows of just shirts and pants, we try to make it more in sections, so we'll have like a housewear section, and we try to set up more display areas.
Donations to the Garden Patch Thrift Store and proceeds from sales help fund Greenhouse Ministries, a faith-based nonprofit helping underserved in our community.
We are located at 309 South Spring Street,
across from the tall NHC building.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
It's Wednesday, September the 21st, and at 7 o'clock tonight, that gospel meeting wraps up at the Minerva Drive Church of Christ. They're at 1115 Minerva Drive, and the guest speaker is Keith Parker. The final gospel meeting tonight at 7 at Minerva Drive Church of Christ. At 8 o'clock this evening, a free recital at MTSU's Wright Music Building, featuring Mayo Stone on bassoon and Spencer Lambright is the composer. Now here's something you can do to help. All day tomorrow, from 7 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon, bring non-perishable food items to the Greenhouse Ministries. And your gift of non-perishable food to the Greenhouse Ministries all day tomorrow will help hungry families here in our community. You won't even have to get out of your car. Just drive up and they'll take your non-perishable food. That's all day tomorrow from 7 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon at Greenhouse Ministries. That's at 309 South Spring Street, sort of diagonally across from the tall city center. That's tomorrow. And also starting tomorrow, the 65th annual NAACP State Convention right here in Murfreesboro. It begins tomorrow at First Baptist Church on East Castle, and then Friday and Saturday it's over at the MTSU James Union Building. The NAACP State Convention tomorrow through Saturday, right here in Murfreesboro. There's a Senior Citizen Talent Show tomorrow, 1 until 4. That's over at the St. Clair Street Center. And at 6 o'clock tomorrow night, the Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra celebrates its 30th birthday. Conductor Joseph Lee ushers in the anniversary celebration at First United Methodist Church on Thompson Lane. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
Lingering clouds early this afternoon, then increasing sun, high near 80. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy, low near 63. Thursday, high of 83. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now, it's 77.
And today's special at Kirk & Burt's is our chicken tender basket. Three hand-breaded tenders and fries for just $3.99. Need an office party or special event catered? Call us at 893-FOOD. This is Tom, and we also deliver in the Kasson Lane area.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS, AM and FM.
Today's guest from the Albert Gore Research Center, Jim Havrin and Kent Seiler.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll get you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too, I'm a-licking my lips, now how about you?
And you're listening to John Blankenship and Friends with Avant Lane, Ken and Sarah Frizzell, Billy Yearwood. And everybody knows by now, you can take about a 15-minute drive down John Bragg Highway, and there is a name that needs to be in the library. And it's about, maybe about 10-mile drive. Turn left at the sign. About two more miles will take you to the Readable Mill. And we're talking history there. The Readable Mill will be 200 years old next year. It was completely refurbished by Tom Brady. And on Saturday morning from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., you can go back and relive history. And go in and eat some of the best pancakes you've ever eaten. And it's one of the few working mills still in operation in the United States. And it's my understanding that they may be even looking for some more things going on there. But I am so glad it's become so successful. And I'm glad that Tom took the effort to make sure that he was able to preserve this type of history for us. Jim, I think you need to go out there. You might be able to find something that you can put in one of those boxes.
Yeah, John Bragg's papers are are at the center.
We do have the Bragg Collection at the Gore Research Center.
And John Bragg has left his mark everywhere in the Middle Tennessee area, especially in Rutherford County and Cannon County. He not only has two of the best sons that you'll ever meet and are very instrumental. Of course, Tommy is the mayor of Murfreesboro, and David is circuit court judge. And they've taken after their dad. But I knew John, and he was one of the nicest people, and he was always concerned about making sure the quality of life stayed at the highest level in this area. And I hope you have a large area for him there.
Well, we have a good portion of Bragg papers, among others, and we also have papers of Jim Cummings, another favorite in this area for many years.
It's good that he and John Bragg's papers are there together, because John Bragg had some great Jim Cummings story. And Jim Haver and I were talking earlier. There are lots of Jim Cummings was quite a character.
Now, would you like to share a couple?
Yes, I'd love to. For a long term legislator and the namesake of Cummings Hall at MTSU and. Two quick ones. John Bragg would tell about Jim Cummings being invited to a supper at a coon hunting club over at the foot of Short Mountain. And so he went, and when he got there, he found out there wasn't a lot of coon hunting going to happen. So it was quite a while before they ended up.
Were the spirits flowing through
the there? The spirits were flowing. Uh-huh. The dice were moving around, the card playing. So there was a good bit of drinking, a good bit of gambling. And so it finally came time on up in the evening to eat. And they called on Mr. Cummings, Representative Cummings, to deliver the blessing. And he said, "I respectfully decline. I don't want the good Lord to know I'm here."
Yeah, that sounds just like you.
Yeah. So then the other one that I always enjoyed was you're familiar with these legislative tags that legislators have, and they'll have the initials and the seal and. John
Please
Bragg,
don't write me a ticket.
John Bragg never had or didn't have one a lot, and he said Mr. Cummings never would get one. And he asked Mr. Cummings, "Mr. Cummings, why don't you want one of these tags?" And he said, "Well, growing up in Woodbury, there was a man that had a spotted horse, and nobody else in town had a horse like it. And he said this gentleman was quite a ladies' man." And you always knew where he'd spent the night because that's where the spotted horse was tied out front. So,
well, I was relating a little story back when, in my earlier days, I had arrested a guy, which was very unusual for me for DUI. I usually took him home back then. But anyway, I had to go to court, and who would be defending him but Mr. Jim Cummings? And as soon as I saw that, I said, "I'm doomed. I mean, I am really doomed." So I walked up and gave my testimony, and Mr. Cummings, who was representing the defendant, came up and started talking to the judge and said, "I know this officer. I know that he'll always tell the truth no matter what he does, and he'll always do the right thing." And I was sitting there just awestruck.
And this was
I didn't know what
this
to
was
say.
The defense attorney for
that
the person
defense
you had arrested.
In General Sessions. I mean, he was such a nice guy, and you never knew where he was going to come from. Have you guys got any more stories for any of the participants in the Gore Center?
Well, it's rich in political history, and obviously it's one of those things where you could tell stories for several hours because of the people that are involved, and just Al Gore Sr. And the his amazing career and all the things he saw and changed and
My brother Mike was a foreman at his farm there for a while.
I didn't know that. My dad was telling me, evidently, there used to be some pretty large cattle sales at Mr. Gore's farm, and
he had the most beautiful cattle you've ever seen. I mean, it's kind of like a Myers Parson had on 231 South there. I mean, if you wanted to buy cattle and the very best, that's where you went. You go to one of those two places at that time. And one of the things I noticed that you've got here is. It would really be interesting to people is that you have a lot of material from the Civil War, World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War. And a lot of this, which really makes it interesting to me, is oral history that actually comes from the vets.
That's true. We're partners with the Library of Congress and the Veterans History Project, which includes oral histories. And so we have hundreds of oral history interviews from vets, obviously not Civil War vets, and but mostly World War II. We have some Korea, Vietnam. I did an oral history interview just a couple of weeks ago with a fellow who came back from Iraq just a couple of years ago.
So I'm trying current
stuff. I'm trying to set up one with a gentleman who served in the Pacific and was in three island invasions in the Pacific in the Army during World War II. Mm-hmm. So it covers a wide range, and we try to get these transcribed as well as having them in the oral format. Mm-hmm. We've digitized the collection. We hope to have much of it available online in the not-too-distant future. But it makes it much easier to access being in digital format. And the transcriptions, when they're ready, they take a while to do and then to edit, you know, mm-hmm. proof them, make sure that we've got everything correct. They also make things very accessible to people.
Now, do you also interview or have any interviews from some of the family members whose husband or wife was killed in extraordinary type circumstances?
We do home front interviews, mm-hmm. and I'm not really certain whether in this particular collection we have very many from widows, mm-hmm. But we do have some, and the main reason that we wouldn't have as many is the same reason we don't have all the vets we'd love to have. Mm-hmm. People just started recording the stories after much of that generation had already passed on.
It's a shame we've lost so much data, so much history, because I remember my great-grandmother would talk to me about the Civil War. And it was, and I wish I had all of that, because she was so clear in what she was relating and made it so interesting. And since I'm talking about my great grandmother, you also focus on women's history, history.
We do have several women's history collections. We have a lot of what we have are collections, papers of say alumni of the. School or faculty of the mm-hmm. school. We also have some more recent history papers from League of Women Voters, mm-hmm. Ladies Charity Circle, these types of things. Then we also have papers that have been collected by faculty member from women's organizations or for research on women's issues. So those are spread out through different parts of the collection. Again, we keep them by the creator, so if they're with the faculty papers or if they were with regional history papers, mm-hmm. they still would be related to women's history.
Mm-hmm. And Truman, this is just one of the real advantages of the Gore Center. I mean, there really aren't a lot of organizations out there actively collecting history right now because of, you know, resources and budgets. I mean, to have some places being able to go out, do interviews, mm-hmm. collect a lot of things that are already done, you know, like things that would be lost. Bob Bullen's
Miss Mary Hall.
Yeah, his all the interviews he did, mm-hmm. You know, things like it. I've always said the Truman Show needs to end up somewhere. I mean, you've had a lot of very interesting guests on this show. John Hood talking about mm-hmm. Seward Air Force Base, mm-hmm. and the way that they would I remember his story about the way they would get some of the best big bands in the country was that the entertainment director at Seward would make a deal with a band that had a gig in Chicago, mm-hmm. and then one in New Orleans, and he'd say, I'll send a plane to fly you from Chicago to New Orleans, but there's only one catch. You've got to do a show in Smyrna. I thought, man, I never knew that. What a great amount, you know, what a great bit of information there to save, and that's one of the things the Gore Center does, mm-hmm. and it's not a large operation. I mean, it's You know, there are what, two full-time employees,
two full-time staff members.
You know,
a lot of graduate students, and so it's a shoestring, very efficient operation, mm-hmm. but they are able to do a lot to continue collecting and cataloging this history.
I don't know if it's just been on the show or what it is, but it seems like in the last year the reel has been running backwards and into time, and we're reliving a lot of the things that happened over the last couple of hundred years in Rutherford County, and people are really interested in it. And there was a time when people really didn't care much about history, but we have gotten into the mode now that people are just reaching out and grabbing for it, and I don't know, maybe people want to recall better times. Or of course, we've got the 200 year the bicentennial for Murfreesboro, and the 100 years for Middle Tennessee State.
Right.
Of course, I have to go through all the name changes for Middle Tennessee State, but it really means a lot to the people in this area, and I run across it all the time, and I'm running across more and more people who want to share their stories and let it be known that they were actually part of the building of this community also.
I think you'll find that most people in this area really do enjoy story, mm-hmm. and they all have a story, and they enjoy hearing a story, and somewhere along the line they think of history as something that's boring, mm-hmm. but the stuff of history is really the things that they do enjoy and they like. They just have to find a way to interact with it that they enjoy, mm-hmm. and they go through periods where this happens, and it's a resurgence of interest in family history or genealogy or local history because of things like the bicentennial and the centennial, and these stir people up because they hear the stories, mm-hmm. and it's not a coincidence that story is part of the word history, because it is the story, and that's what catches people's attention.
And with students, Truman, it helps give them some perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have journalism students in some of my classes, and we're talking about advertising and politics. Mm-hmm. We have a collection of Bart's ads and others that we can show them over the years. And we can talk about that. Gives them some, when they go out and they graduate and they write a story about a campaign maybe that's hotly contested and where the negative ads are flying back and forth, they can see, well, this isn't the first time this ever happened, or this issue came up. One of the files I was going through today was healthcare reform from 1992. some of the things that George Bush Sr. Mm-hmm. was talking about, and a new a survey that Bart did on healthcare reform then. Jim Cooper's managed competition plan was in the box. And again, all from the early 90s. And then we just relived that again, a couple of years ago, and still, dealing with the issue. So there's all kinds of good history and good perspective, in these boxes, which leads me to the box set in front of us, Truman.
Yes, and it is sealed.
So let's... Well, you say we unseal it, and
what would Ed McMahon always said? It was
hermetically sealed. Yeah, I think this is just packing tape, but it has been X-rayed.
Uh huh.
That means it. What happened was years ago. These boxes. Yeah, thanks.
And this is history, folks. This is the first time this box has been opened
since the early 90s. What happened in the basically in the 90s? Sometimes we had to get rid of a lot of stuff that was in our office, mm-hmm. because we had just. We'd been blessed by being there. We didn't know we were going to be there 26 years, but in the early 90s, we'd been there 10 or 12 years. So mm-hmm. We were small offices filling up with paper. So we got a lot of stuff, boxed it up, and sent it to a storage unit. So this is one of those boxes that was probably boxed up sometime in the early 90s. And there are 650, just like this one, boxed up at different times. So let's see what we've got here. So you can see just oodles and oodles of file folders and trim them.
Kent has opened the box.
And flip it around without knocking anything off.
And it looks like most of the stuff is in file folders.
Yeah, it's in file folders. So look, here's one you know about, COPS Grants, 1995.
Yes.
So this is the COPS Grants
original
legislation when it came up. And I think Rutherford County ended up hiring a lot of, it's where if you, the federal government would pay part of the, seem to got an application here from Middle Tennessee State University Department mm-hmm. of Public Safety. So when they were applying for a COPS grant.
And that was a time when there was very little money to pay for law enforcement officers. And of course, as you know, Rutherford County was growing in leaps and bounds at that time, and it was almost impossible to keep up.
Here's a file. It's just labeled crime. National Gambling Impact and Policy Commission. Automotive tariff debate. So it looks like, I'm sure that's one Nissan was interested in, from 1995. Interior appropriations, there's probably something about Stones River in there. Back in the back here is one that's labeled Lytle Creek. And that's all the information, I bet, from I'm writing to request that the Public Works Committee authorize a study resolution for environmental resources study on two wetlands areas through the Corps of Engineers. So that was probably the beginning of Lytle Creek or either, no, the Oakland's Black Fox and Oakland Springs. So that was one of the beginnings of what led to the Discovery House.
You know, you go through all this and it's endless amounts of paperwork and information. And you think about all of the bills and that come before Congress, and you wonder how in the world can anything ever get done, because you have to give attention to almost everything that comes across your desk.
Yeah, there are, you know, this one's labeled Secretary of State correspondence. As members, so, oh, that's to Warren Christopher, so that's U.S. Secretary of State. But I was looking through a file earlier today, and it was letters from Phil Bredesen talking about aid for drought-stricken farmers back mm-hmm. when he was governor. Some things dealing with highways. But yeah, it is one thing when working in a congressional office, you learn very quickly, is you've got to be a pretty good generalist. I mean, you may be, you know, you could be talking about tariffs on communications and cell phones mm-hmm. 1 minute and problems that hog farmers are having, you know, that afternoon, because there's just a wide range of things, and there's material on all those things.
I hope the students are aware of how fortunate they are to have you in the classroom, because you've lived most of your life in that particular venue. I mean, you have worked directly for the people on a large level for many, many years, and you have all that experience and all that knowledge. Let me ask you one question. If I was a student that was sitting in your classroom and I would wanted to know maybe about running for a particular office in this day and time, what kind of
what answer
information would you give that individual?
Well,
it's such a worrisome thing. When you start thinking about running for office and you know that you're going to be attacked from the time that you make it public till the election day, how do people stand up under that anymore?
It's public service and it is a sacrifice.
Right.
I mean, if you're looking at running for the state legislature, mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to be tied up from January through May, a good portion of each week. They really don't pay you much, mm-hmm. and you're away from your job. Mm-hmm. So
and it's not a full-time job.
No, it's a part-time job. There, I think they make what $17,000-$18,000. Then maybe with per diem, they may get to the low 30. You know, mm-hmm. so you're probably doesn't make up for what most of them lose by not being where they're supposed to be. Plus, you are generally expected to be at a lot of other things too when you get back. I mean, mm-hmm. If somebody's supporters, you go to a lot of weddings, a lot of funerals, a lot of meetings. It's something you got to want to do, and it is so important though mm-hmm. because, you know, these are people who are administering a multi-billion-dollar budget that is responsible for educating our children, you know, keeping us safe on our highways, so many things. But for doing that, not only is the salary a sacrifice, but the moment you decide you're going to run, your opponent, and again, either party, they're going to hire a researcher. Mm-hmm. And that researcher is going to come in here, and they're going to go through everything you've ever done, every public record, mm-hmm. every lawsuit, if there's ever been one, any dirt they can find, any skeletons in the closet they can find. And then they're going to take that, and they're going to make a TV ad out of it, or a direct mail piece, or a radio ad, and you know, just try to tear you apart. So, so those are kind of the, you know, the roots. So, to go and try to convince someone to do this in very important work gets harder and harder.
Do you think I never have liked to do negative campaigning? Would you advise a person who wanted to get into it? How would you advise them to handle that, to stay off the other person?
You know, I'm doing one of my classes right now is on political advertising in modern politics. Mm-hmm. And one of the books I'm using is written by the chairman of the political science department at Vanderbilt, John Geer. Mm-hmm. And it's called In Defense of Negativism. Mm-hmm. And basically argues that in a democracy, that is just important to point out the positive things about a campaign as it is the negative. He mm-hmm. argues that it's got to be there. But I think, and there's some of that that's true, but there is a limit. And there is a place where voters just turn off everyone, mm-hmm. and it really disenfranchises them because they get so frustrated, they don't want to vote. It keeps good people out of the offices. And then generally, a target of a lot of the attacks is government.
Right.
And, you know, we really need government to be strong and effective and be able to get things done and have people have confidence in it. You know, if you're at Nissan and you're competing with Toyota and all the people at Nissan are doing is attacking their leadership, then they're not effective in dealing when you need them. So it's really a mixed bag.
I'm a firm believer that all the negative campaigning in the last 10 years especially has brought down the public's regard as far as an individual and government too. I think that's part of the negative concept of government is the campaigning.
I saw there's been several polls lately that says the public's positive feelings toward Congress is in mm-hmm. approval rating for Congress is in the low teens. Mm-hmm. And then I saw another one yesterday that people believe 58 cents of every dollar that they send in federal taxes is wasted.
Wow.
So, and that's the highest it's ever been. Mm-hmm. So, there's some real problems, and a lot of that is kind of the fighting that's going on.
We're going to let you know it's a bad time to bring in Stan McNabb. But bless
Stan
his heart, he'll rise above
you.
All
That's
this,
right.
I guarantee you. And we're talking about Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And one other thing, at Stan McNabb's, where you buy a new or used car, you'll have oil changes and tires for the life of that vehicle.
Hi, my name is Tim Schott. I'm the founder of Bondware.com. Here's a quick word from one of our valued customers, WGNS.
At WGNS, we use Bondware.com for our website. They take care of you. They care about you. Bondware.com.
Bondware is located on John Rice Boulevard, just past Sam's Club. Give us a call at 333-7775. Our packages start at $25 a month. Sign up for a free trial on Bondware.com and use promo code RADIO for $50 off your initial setup cost.
This is Sean Brown at Southeastern Tire Service, where we now offer the Michelin Promise Plan. The Michelin Promise Plan is a new offer which includes a 30-day ride guarantee, 3-year flat tire changing assistance, and a limited mileage warranty on all Michelin passenger and light truck tires, replacement and original equipment. Did you know we now provide air conditioning service? Let our ASC certified technicians get your car road ready today.
Southeastern Tire Service on Broad Street across from Advance Auto.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
Well, this has been a great show, and I hope some of you are able to go over to the Albert Gore Center and take part in some of the history that they have there. And Jim, what would an individual need to do if there was, if a person was going to do some research or maybe wanted to look up some history on a certain person or event or whatever? What would they need to do?
Well, the most important thing to do is try to do a little bit of pre-research. If you were going to come to the Gore Research Center, maybe go to our website, which is gorecenter.mtsu.edu, and you can find that on the MTSU website or Google it. And look at the finding aids that we have on the website and try to narrow your search down first so that you know what kind of collections you want to look at. We're open 9 to 4 on most Mondays through Fridays. It never hurts to call in advance just in case for some reason that we are closed for a holiday or something of that nature. But other than that, come over to the campus, and we'll be happy to take care of you.
And that also goes if they want to give you some historical data.
That is correct as well. Please contact us, and we have to check. We have a collection policy of what exactly fits our collection. Mm-hmm. So, if it doesn't fit our collection policy, we'll help you find the place that it does.
Jim Havron. I've really enjoyed it. And, of course, Kent Seiler.
Thank you. Glad to be back here, Truman.
Good to have you here.
Glad to be here.
You've been a good friend over the years, and you continue to be. And you know, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
It is.
And we will have you here tomorrow at 2 o'clock.